it takes to thrive. Hi, everybody. Welcome on Valentine's Day. Thanks for joining in on this event, which I'm really looking forward to. I want to say, first off, just remind everybody that we're being recorded because we want to make this available for people who can't be on the call today to be able to access it. So anyone who speaks, you're agreeing to being recorded. And when you, as participants, want to come in and ask a question, please keep the question to a minute and comments to 2 minutes so that we can have more issues and topics discussed and more people participate. And the other thing on just this administrative front I wanted to say is that we have evaluations that go out at the end of this, and we really listen to them and take your feedback very seriously. So please participate in that. And as a testimony to how much we take it seriously, a lot of you have requested that we spend time talking about current events and interpreting the news. And we decided to actually add an extra event often, just periodically. And the next one is going to be a casual hangout devoted completely to interpreting the news and discussing current events. Whatever on your mind will just casually be available for 2 hours to discuss what's happening and what, you know, where do we get our news? Where do you get your news? What do we think is going on? And that's February 28th. So continue to suggest to us what's working and what isn't, and we'll respond. So I'm really excited about this innovative communities because really one of the most creative, essential, personally satisfying and globally impactful things we can do is change how it is we relate to one another and the planet. And that's what intentional communities are all about. And, you know, one of the things I especially appreciate is that the whole idea of intentional communities is based on a premise that holds human beings in high regard, as if we actually can work well together and we can live in harmony with the planet and we can solve problems, and especially we can honor personal sovereignty and group well-being by addressing what it means to be distinct and unified at the same time. And as I've said before, to me, this is the crux of the matter, whether it's in our interpersonal relationships, how to stay true to ourselves, honor the wholeness of each individual while being in union with each other, and or at any group of any size. I think that's what it's all about. And I'm deeply grateful to and inspired by those taking leadership in forging ahead with these new communities. And, you know, whether it's because the motivations for joining intentional communities are vast. And, you know, I thought whether it's to have a better way to raise our kids or because it just makes so much more financial sense to team up, or we're aging and really recognize the limits of the whole nuclear setup and want to be with, you know, shared consciousness people, all different ages, or we want to leave less footprint or have more community or explore new energy or new architecture or new ecological farming and ways to use and share water more consciously, and how to learn how to resolve problems when there's actually support for that. Whatever the motivation, there are a lot of people coming together now around the world, as we'll get to hear about more today. And it's just truly so encouraging to me, and we wanted to share that encouragement with the network by inviting these fabulous people to join. So one of the things that we have going with the WebEx technology that we're using is we can only have 5 video feeds up at one time, and we want our panelists to be visible all the time. And Goa, our beloved host, is mandatorily visible all the time because he's holding down the fort. So Foster and I are just going to trade off on who's on video. So I'm going to hand it over now to you, Foster, to introduce our panelists and mention something about the format for the day.
Okay. Goa, is my video empowered?
Yes, go ahead, just click the button next to your name and the video feed will start.
Okay, great. There you go. All right. Well, hello, everyone. Welcome and happy Valentine's Day to all of you. I'm especially thrilled to be able to get to do this today with my beloved forever Valentine, Kimberly, without whom none of this would be going on. And I was especially excited in preparing for this. I could not imagine a better topic for a day designed to celebrate love, because the people in the Thrive Network are well aware that that we need to be able to love way beyond just, you know, being turned on to one person or taking good care of one person. I said in the movie, and I really mean it, that I really think we're here on Earth to learn how to love, to master love at all levels. And to me, intentional communities embody that probably more than anything that I can think of. The communities that we're particularly interested are shaped around loving care. Care for oneself, for each other, and for the land that we live on. And this is reflected, and you'll see today with the groups that will be visiting with us, that it's reflected in a dedication to sustainability and to communication, to mindfulness, to spirit, and especially to freedom and an ethic of non-violation or do no harm. And I want to be very clear right at the beginning for anyone who sees this in the future that we're making a very clear distinction between true community, which we see as the voluntary gathering of sovereign beings, that is an intentional community, rather than the coercion and domination of communism or the deceptive socialist manipulation of what Agenda 21 has taken to calling communitarianism. So let's don't be confused by similar words. Now, in the Thrive movement, we've really come to see through the lens that all of the hundreds of key issues, the major problems on the planet right now, are fundamentally breakdowns, usually perpetrated intentionally, in the wholeness of natural systems. And as the old systems are crumbling, and they are, and it's accelerating, or they're getting overturned, we need emerging alternatives to elite control, to broken systems, or to coercive institutions. Now, some of you may have seen the TV show, the recent one called Utopia, where they put a whole bunch of people from different walks of life together and basically put hundreds of cameras around a piece of land and said, go for it. And like many real life communities, it was canceled partway through the first season. So it's not enough to just want to live harmoniously. The communities that we're especially interested in, and the guests today are shining examples of, are committing their lives to community design that aligns with natural principles. So what does that mean? To us, it means honoring the Taurus principles that we talked about in the Thrive movie. And that means following the features of what Elizabeth Satouris has identified as the features of healthy living systems. And that's principles like self-creation, balance of energy in with energy out, reciprocity amongst the parties, integrity, and keeping what works and moving on from what doesn't. And all of these communities that are represented today, they reflect a commitment to consciousness, to spirit, and especially to values, not just for themselves, but for the betterment of humanity. But they're also grounded in thoughtful approaches to things like ownership, decision-making, conflict resolution, money and currency, energy, division of labor, the notion of authority and governance. You know, what is sovereignty? What's the difference between a rule and a guideline, and when are they necessary? And in my experience, and I was a professional conflict resolution facilitator for many years in Silicon Valley, working with companies and law firms and families, even communities. So I know how critical each one of these skills and awarenesses is. So I am thrilled to be able to really explore not only the abstract principles, but the grounded nature of how this is all working out with the kind of people that we have on board today. And I'll tell you about them in a minute. First of all, let me give you an overview of the format for today. We've asked each of the three teams that are specifically represented as expert guests today to take 10 minutes to share an overview of their community, things like vision and principles. So, you know, what's the status of it? What are their challenges? What are their lessons? And then after each of the groups has had a chance to do that, then we want to just throw it open for questions. I'll share a few questions that people have put on the subscriber portal that they wanted to ask the experts today. And we'll also open it up to, you know, from our primary interest in these kinds of conversations is not to just have a radio show with famous people or, you know, give some lecture, but to really lay some groundwork for a dynamic conversation with experts and then open it up to you to find out what you're thinking, what you're doing, what you're wondering about. So a quick overview of who's on the call today, and then I'll introduce them more specifically before each one starts their introduction, is we've got Kate Wildrick and Aaron Imhoff from the Ingenuity Innovation Center. We've got Sasha Stone from the New Earth Nation. And we've got Jay Sable, and I hope Jack Reed also, from the One Community. That one is at onecommunityglobal.org, if any of you want to bring that up on your site. The New Earth Nation is at newearthnation.org, and the Ingenuity Innovation Center is at youringenuity.com. So we're going to start with Kate and Aaron from the Ingenuity Innovation Center. Kate is a longtime workforce consultant. She's consulted with companies and organizations all over the world, specifically aligning people and purpose with sustainability initiatives. And her husband, Aaron, is a self-taught inventor. I would call him a pragmatist and just a dynamite problem solver. So, Go, I'd like you to turn over the baton to them and have them take 10 minutes to tell them about what they're up to.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, everyone. This is really exciting for us to participate, and we really want to say thank you. It's Valentine's Day, and we're feeling the love everywhere. So, it's very exciting. I know that maybe some of you don't know anything about the Ingenuity Innovation Center, so I'm just going to jump in and share a little bit about who we are and what we do and kind of what inspired us to do this crazy adventure. Our vision was really born out of the nightmare of the economic downturn. I used to own and operate a town called Service Creek, population 2, out in Central Oregon. And in 2009, that's when the economic downturn hit, and I learned where really bad country songs come from. You lose your husband, you lose your town, you lose a trailer that you were living in. We lost a couple of trucks. The dog died. The cat ran away. It all happened. I'm hoping that we can get that song written because I know it'll be that one great hit, one hit wonder. And I moved back to Portland and found myself in this little 300 square foot apartment above this kind of crazy, you know, is a Clinton Street Theater, and every Saturday they air the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and it's the longest running Rocky Horror Picture Show, I think, in the world, but at least I can say here in the States. So I got to have the opportunity to meet Aaron, and Aaron, maybe you can tell a little bit about your sad story.
I didn't actually have a town, but I did have a contracting business that I was trying to be smart with what was coming. I was in real estate prior to that and kind of saw where things were heading, and tried to put everything I had into a single property and kind of try to weather through the storm, and that didn't happen. And I moved back to Portland with a lot of the same issues that Kate had, and we ended up moving into the same apartment together. She was going to move out, and I was going to take over her apartment because I did like the location, and you were going to move in with a friend, and that didn't happen. I almost kind of think she tricked me. And we ended up together in this 300 square foot apartment, and you know, it provided a wonderful perspective. It, you know, as we got to look out the window and see the people down below and all the strife that everyone was going through, it got us to question and begin thinking, you know, what could we do differently? And of course, I kind of felt like I had a lot of the solutions in my head, and I wanted to play and practice. And I pitched that idea to Kate, and she was like, well, you know, I just got out of owning a town. I'm not really ready to own some land again. And but you know, she challenged me. And I think that that's a major part of this new movement is we're challenging a lot of what's going on. And her challenge to me was, well, what? We have these 300 square feet. What can you do here that gets you a step closer? And we crowdfunded enough money to build a basic John Bedini motor, which we began to show people. And that really opened the doors to people coming in. We'd pull people off the street and be like, look at this. This is incredible.
And that was the interesting thing, because from my workforce background and just seeing a lot what was coming out of our school systems and then into the corporate world, I was watching what was happening, that we didn't have strong critical thinkers or even people that were heart-centered. So that was one of the reasons that I left the corporate world to go and get a town somewhere out in the middle of nowhere. And what was really, really fascinating is I was freaking out myself, just kind of typing away and trying to do some of these e-learning things to help bring in money. Aaron would pull random people off the streets and bring them upstairs into the apartment, and he'd show them, this is what I've created. He didn't exactly have the language yet, but what was curious was the folks that had some sort of academic background or science background immediately discredited what he had to say and said, you need to go back to school and you need to get a degree. And then the folks that didn't have that background would come in and they saw all of the possibilities. And so this went on for probably about another year. We had made a change and moved into a little townhome. And the same story would keep playing out. And then one day I just got kind of ticked off with it. And I said, that's it. We need to look at bringing our family together and seeing about getting some land, because this thing, you know, with this, the institutions and people recognizing that some stuff isn't working and we need a playground to be able to create. So that's what brought us on this crazy adventure to find 20 acres in Columbia County, which is a rural county just right outside of Portland, Oregon. And we talked with Aaron's mom. Rosemary was down in Albuquerque at the time, and she was stuck in the hospital system, seeing managed care really take people out, not helping provide and support them. And with the water shares, you know, water concerns down in Albuquerque, that's where she got inspired to start looking for land. So we found 20 acres that was sitting there doing nothing and moved onto the property in 2012. We pitched this whole idea of doing this community-supported innovation center that was designed to create sustainable solutions and then move them out using an open source platform. And our first flagship project was really around aquaponics, which is the merger of growing fish and vegetables. Because our thought was, you can't do your best and brightest thinking without having some good food. So Maslow's hierarchy of needs has kind of been our roadmap about creating those basic needs. And then that's where we start to see people self-actualize and finding and discovering their passion and purpose. So I know we put together a 2-minute clip, and Go, I would love some support on helping showcase what this little intro is, so I can give you an idea about who we are and what we're doing.
Great. Do you have the share file button on the left-hand side there?
Let's see.
I guess not.
Screen, it'll be a little green area at the top.
I'm not seeing it.
Okay.
But we do have How about sharing my screen?
Will that work?
See if that works. And we can
actually
just...
best thing to do would be share the file, because the audio won't come through if it's share screen, unfortunately.
Okay.
But it's in that same area. Should have an option to share.
Okay. It's we may just need to put it into the chat with a quick link, and maybe people can view it at another time. The files are quite
large.
File
from here, either way.
Or if you have access, it would be that YouTube link.
Sure. Would you like me to share it?
Sure.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, great. I'm going to take the presenter rights back, and then I'll share the file real quick. 2 seconds.
You.
Are we back?
Yeah, go right ahead.
All right. So that's just kind of a quick overview, but food is the first area we decided to tackle, but we have also three other areas that we focus attention on for sustainable solutions. So we also address water, we address food, I mean, health and well-being, and then energy, which
right.
is your playground.
Right, it is.
You have a mad scientist lab, all of your own. So.
We do, which is kind of nice. And part of a lot of what we do here is mainly showing people what's possible. Mm-hmm. We're trying to create these solutions, and a lot of them right now are kind of in the small step of just showing what's possible, and we're beginning to move them out. Mm-hmm. So some of the projects that we're working on are light bulbs, actually. We've been able to create about 100 watts of light in lumen equivalency for about 0.8 to a watt of total power. As well as we're looking at, you know, recycling. A lot of what we try to do is find trash and repurpose it towards energy. And believe it or not, we have a big backyard full of all these wonderful ingredients that could be used to actually gain our energy independence. At least we think so.
Yeah.
So
this is, you know, what we've created here is just, it's a playground for people to show up. We have plenty of space, and this is where we've been working with people here locally and then also regionally to take the space that we have available. And, you know, our question is to everyone is, how do we start to create a power with environment versus power over? And we've had to develop a lot of different new skill sets. We've had to also do a lot of unlearning to just pay attention. And what I find fascinating is that our whole aquaponics system has become a really great teaching metaphor. And we look at these natural systems to be able to use as tools as people from all walks of life come in. And found that there's probably about 2% out there that are doers, which we're interested. They're a lot of fun to play with. And there's a lot of watchers. So in the shift, we're seeing a lot of things change, and as the watchers are starting to get more excited about our story advancing, they're like, how can I step in to do something similar? So we're one of Oregon's first benefit companies, and Oregon was the 20th state to enact legislation to recognize companies that focus more on just the bottom line around profit. We now are legally protected to make decisions that factor in the environment and also the social impact. And there's a certifying body called B-Lab, which has a 365-degree assessment to make sure that you're actually doing what you say you're doing to be a socially and environmentally conscious organization. So we've built on these principles, and it's been fascinating to reach people where they're at in their process to help them engage in their passion, and then moving out through purpose. So we're helping people essentially create a lifestyle. It's not just another business, and we're not hiding away in the hills. We're here about meeting people where they're at and then talking about how can you consciously shift? How can you mindfully make a decision to help make the world a better place? And if you need a place to play, we have the playground.
Well, thank you very much, Kate and Aaron. That's a really inspiring overview, and we'll have time soon to get into all sorts of other aspects of that and to entertain people's questions. So let's move on for now to the New Earth Nation. Sasha Stone, many of you, I'm sure, know of him already, but he's a fabulous artist, musician, philosopher, visionary, and really a manifester. Is someone who hangs on to his vision until it becomes real. And I'm thrilled that he could join us today to represent what his community is doing. So, Sasha, please, welcome and let us know what you're up to.
Thank you, Foster. I'm so delighted to be here with you and Kimberly. Haven't seen you for far too long. I ought to warn you that it's 4:30 a.m. here in the Balinese jungle, and I'm definitely in the twilight zone. I've stepped into the other side, the other zone right now, but just very, very happy to be here. You know, Foster, we prepared an 11-minute piece earlier today because the monsoon is upon us here, and we keep losing signals, but we've got a piece which I'd like to upload. If Goa could walk us through it.
Yeah, that would be great.
We share screen with you. Is that how we do it?
No.
No, Sasha, in the same area where it says share file or share screen, there should be something that says share file. You want to use that option and then navigate to the file.
Okay, share file. Got it.
Awesome.
We're navigating to the file now, desktop. Boom.
Sasha, it's lucky you're a former rock and roller. You're familiar with this time of night.
Actually, I've got my producer right next to me doing it.
Is that Avi?
That is, yes.
Hi, Avi. Welcome.
Hi.
And Sasha, go ahead and click on the full screen icon on the bottom right of that video.
Greetings. In the first instance, I'd like to thank our beloved friends, Kimberly and Foster, for inviting me to the symposium. And it's going to get to a good reach, so thank you for that. Where the New Earth Nation differs from any of the other conscious communities that exist on the planet, some of which have been around for a very long time. And the answer is very
Wow, that was a fabulous introduction. Thank you so much to your team, Sasha, for putting together such a coherent overview of a vast vision in a short amount of time. Really appreciate that. Anything else you want to say before we go on to the third group and then open up to questions?
No, I don't think so, except for the fact that, you know, just to underscore, Foster, that our primary concern is really looking at how folks like Kate and Aaron, who are extraordinary pioneers in what they're doing. My concern is, where does the federal and state government begin to intercede or interfere in their privilege, in what yes. what they've chosen to do with their lives? Because what we're seeing all around the world is infringement and impinging on our natural born civil liberties by this behemoth called government, which is in point of fact a corporation masquerading as government. It's a desperately yes. serious business when you yes. understand, of course, the Babylonian route to our so-called governments. So that's really where we're coming from principally.
Okay, great. It means so much to Kimberly and me. As you probably know, the whole freedom issue is at the absolute core of the Thrive movement. We see it as the core principle for all the emerging solutions. And the fact that you're envisioning something which can connect and support pre-existing communities to share principles, but also to support one another to keep emerging as the old system is crumbling, so that we don't get bogged down in just the tyranny of the next regime is fantastic. So thank you for going into that, and we'll do much more.
Oh yeah, plus I just want to interrupt for a second before you move forward, besides yeah. to say thank you so much. I love this. Is to remind people to please use the private chat window if you have technical issues, and that gets to Mitch, and then use the question portal to ask questions, and then we'll get to those after the next presentation. But it really helps us to not get those all mixed up here or to take Goa's time right now when Mitch is available to help. Thank you.
Okay, and next up is the One Community. And Jay Sable is an entrepreneur with a background in holistic living, psychology, and nutrition. And he's been working for a while with an author and consultant named Jack Reed, who's the author of an amazing book called The Next Evolution, which also helps to lay out a lot of the principles that can make individual communities successful. But also, I think the point of why he wrote that is to identify the principles by which the community we call planet Earth can ultimately be successful. So, Jay, take it away.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. I think we have a video as well. Can we run that first, Goa?
Please.
You bet. Hold on. I'm going to take the rights back, and I'll load that video up right now. 2 seconds.
While Goa's loading that up, I just want to take the moment here to announce also that we have someone else who I'm pretty sure is on the call today, named Robert Miller from Sustainable Family Communities. And he's sent us a book recently, which I have deeply enjoyed and been inspired by. And his communities are self-sustaining, free market, and designed to assist families in removing themselves from poverty by building the antithesis of poverty. And these are already happening around the world. And I'm hoping that Robert will get a chance later on to update us on what's going on with his project. And we're also hoping that members of our network, dear friends, Corrine McLaughlin and Gordon Davison, who lived for many years and were founders and organizers of the Sirius community, S-I-R-I-U-S, back east, also very experienced in all of this. So we look forward to the discussion. Go, are you ready?
Yes, and I also just wanted to apologize. There's a few people out in the community, they're not able to get this video feed of these shared files. So first, we apologize that. We're going to be researching that with WebEx to see why that's happening. But also, Jay, if you want, drop in the link to the YouTube video of the one that we're going to be sharing, so that if people have that issue, they can be watching that while we play it here for the rest of the group.
Okay, I added it right there. It's in the homepage.
Perfect. Okay, I'm sharing the file now.
Thank you.
One Community is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We are creating open source and free share blueprints and resources, the Inventive Portal, and free self-instructions for harnessing. Creating solution models that create additional solution models in the service of all life on this planet. This includes highest bid approaches to food, energy, housing, education, for-profit and non-profit business, society, and
go ahead, you're on now again.
Okay, thanks for that, Jay. What else would you like to say with your time?
Well, that's pretty much summarizes what we're creating. You know, our goal is to transform the planet for everybody, and we believe that it's possible within our lifetime to do that. And so our strategy for accomplishing that is to make an open source model easy enough, affordable enough, and to demonstrate it as attractive enough so that the idea will spread on its own. And so we talk about creating a self-replicating model, and then to address the issue of creating environments that meet everybody's needs and address the issues of freedom and individuality and people wanting to do things the way that they want to do them. Everything that we're creating is open source and free shared, and it's designed as a platform for other people to build off of it. You know, so the housing models are all designed to either be implemented as individual components or as complete village infrastructure, you know, same thing with the food and the energy. And so our team has been working full time now for 4 years on creating open source blueprints, tools, tutorials, and resources. I can actually drop in some examples of what that would, just some of the amazing things that we've created here. I'll drop in a list. I created a little list. These are some of the things that have been most popular as far as what we've shared through social media. I'll just put those in the chat box. But we're covering all aspects: food, energy, housing, education, for-profit, non-profit business creation. We've open sourced how we set up our nonprofit organization. We're open sourcing our tax process. We're open sourcing everything from growing in ground to hoop houses to sustainable food infrastructure that can be built anywhere in the world, as well as the housing. The education model, open source education model, has 8 different components that cover everything from breaking down and identifying the new paradigm education models that are out there and the key components of those and integrating all those into individual lesson plans. It's all designed so that people can take it and use it in the way that they want, and so that people can participate and make it better. And so we're designing it all as a global collaborative so that everybody can add their own ideas into it. And we've created the web infrastructure already, so as people start taking the things that we've developed and doing them differently, then we can add those into the global archive of open source information as well, so that it just continues to grow. Yeah. And the idea, once again, like I said, is to make it easy enough, affordable enough, and demonstrate it's attractive enough so the idea can spread on its own. And if it spreads on its own, and we can get mainstream involvement and interest in what it is that we're doing, then we see it as supporting all sustainable projects out there, you know, because it will engage people in a different way. And so they can look at everything else that's out there and see what flavor fits them best and participate, or take the things that we're doing and design them differently or better or exactly the way we've set them up. And so that's what we're all about.
One of the things that I especially love about the groups that we have represented on today is the level of thinking that you all have done prior to actually, you know, grounding it in the physical world. You know, the One Community and New Earth Nation are still in early stages in terms of physical manifestation. But, you know, as anybody who's worked on building a house or a, you know, a garden project or anything else, if you just start building without being clear on the design and being clear on the principles that the design is built on, you run into a lot of trouble and frustration. And the one of the things that's drawn us to the groups that are on here today, I mean, we could have invited people from the farm or from Arco Santi or from Christiania or from Damanhur, Findhorn, and they're all fantastic communities. But I expect, you know, Kimberly and I have had in-depth conversations with each of the experts on here today, particularly about the key elements of sovereignty. You know, what does sovereignty mean? What is your level of freedom within and without this community? And what's the nature of governance? How are decisions made, and how are conflicts resolved, and so forth? So I really look forward to getting into those issues, as well as any that anyone else has, as we go forward. I want to start with one question that was submitted on our website, because we really encourage people to submit questions ahead of time. That gives us a chance to organize those and make sure that they get to the experts. And one question that was sent in by someone who...
Foster, can I interrupt you one more time? Because we're getting inundated with technical stuff here. Okay. So if people can send private chat to Mitch E., it will really help, because I'm trying to, you know, gather up and see who's asking questions and stuff, and I'm wading through a whole lot of other stuff to get there, so it will really help us. So
private- Yeah, our apologies for this. WebEx is a fantastically capable system. It's also a complex dashboard, and so it takes a while for people to get comfortable with it, and many people are probably new to Thrive Together today, so, you know, bear with us. It works eventually. So one question that was sent in by someone who's actually been involved in the creation of communities in places like Honduras and Panama, Michael B. from our web thread wanted to ask our experts today, have you considered a possible solution for people who come from information-rich cultures and then end up in communities where it may be a dramatic shift in their way of life, perhaps not getting access to a lot of the technologies they're used to? And another person in our network, Ed, and asked a related question, how will the internet facilitate and be used to transition to a more organic community-based civilization and help the healing of the schism in ourselves? So any of you who would like to address the notion of technology and its role, either in or not in these communities, go ahead.
I'm happy to answer somewhat to that. I mean, the internet is a useful tool, Foster, insofar as we still have unfettered use of the internet. But of course, that also raises the question of metadata analysis and a dragnet surveillance, which we're all of us now suffering, again, at the hands of governments, which have pretty much gone rogue. So that's our concern, is about, you know, how far does the internet serve living men and women and conscious sovereign communities, and how much is it being used effectively against us by the state and by the crown?
Yes.
It's just a consideration we have to be very mindful of.
Yeah. How about you, Kate and Aaron? What's your technology situation in, at One Community?
That's a loaded question over here because we get into all sorts of discussions, and I really appreciate the sovereignty piece being brought up because that's been a very hot topic where we lose our video.
Nope. I don't think so. Keep going.
Can you still hear us?
We can hear you. We don't see you yet. If you can click on the video button.
Okay, we're back.
I'd love
now.
To see you again.
So going back to that that whole piece, is it's really about meeting people where they're at, because it's kind of like the rabbit hole here. We first of all have these different things, and the technology piece, we, you know, so like Aaron mentioned the lights, you know, for example, or alternative energy, that becomes kind of an entrance down the rabbit hole to get into these other discussions. Because it's really what we invite is people's curiosity into here. And so I know that we've been, you know, looking at like what is in our backyards or in our garages that we're not using that could really be repurposed. That certainly brought us into some projects in second and third world countries where we've been helping create solutions there. But I know, Aaron, you've done a lot of, you know, mindful thinking about this with like the internet and open source and how this also ties into sovereignty and
you know,
people's knowledge and information.
Right. I just want to say real quick that it's not technology that's either good or bad. It's who's wielding it. Right. Yeah. You know, we can create machines that clean the water, and we can create them that pollute the water too. Mm-hmm. So we're approaching, like the other speakers have said, you know, this moment of, where the internet is this wonderful tool. It's, you know, if you talk to any theoretical physicists, they talk about the internet as a form of alien technology, alien communication. If we look at in that aspect, at the same time, it's being abused. And so how can we still continue to use it? And I just want to touch to that one topic again about sovereignty, that this is the hottest topic that no one's talking about.
Yep.
No one's talking about. And I want to just pick on a neighbor of ours real quick, over across the river in Washington, the Esseti Ranch. I don't know if anyone is familiar with what Esseti does, but they have 80 acres, and they've begun to build on those 80 acres without permits. And you can imagine what happened. You know, the county paid them a visit. Well, they very strategically figured out a way to unregister from the county. And now the county no longer has jurisdiction over their land.
Yeah, yeah.
If you and look at the county website, it looks very much for their land. The map is the same as an Indian reservation. It's blocked out, and
wow.
They've lost their address. Now, this is a type of technology, actually. Mm-hmm. It's a legal form of technology that I'm so glad to hear is being brought up today. I really think that this is, again, the most important topic of our time. Mm-hmm. Is how the law has been used against us.
And to touch on that, what we're really working on a foundational level is about how do we make agreements? And most of us are so unconscious about how we give away our power. So these are the basic fundamental things that we're working on. And then as we get people kind of down the rabbit hole, this is where we start to create this really fun playground for interesting topics and discussions. So it's exciting times over here.
Yeah, and I want to add that I've had the privilege of relating to many different communities, either who are already existing or starting up, and frankly, virtually none of them to me would be categorized as sort of Luddite communities that are going to, you know, sort of be an Amish model where you're going back to horse and buggy and no computers and no telephones and no light bulbs and so forth. What I love about so many of communities like the ones being represented on here today are that you're looking to align with technology wisely. And the sort of social networking that the New Earth Nation is doing actually to connect all of these communities through technology with each other to empower one another and to build the decentralized organic network of sovereign beings and sovereign communities. I can't imagine a more ideal approach to creating a sustainable planet Earth, because as we all know, the efforts of the would-be controllers to establish a global police state are going forward as rapidly as they can. However, at the same time, the emergence of conscious people who care and want to honor each other and the land as fully valid, conscious, and deserving of the rights of protection is growing so fast, and it's so intelligent, and now technology empowers tremendously about our chances going forward. And Sasha, I would love if you would elaborate a little more, because I know you and I, when we were together in Colorado back in 2013, and we talked late into the night about some of these sovereignty issues, and I've been so inspired by the depth and the breadth of what your team has done in terms of bringing on experts in sovereignty and in different types of law. I would love if you would describe a little more, you know, what's it going to take for us each to declare ourselves as sovereign beings and our communities as ultimately free of the domination of the state?
It's incredibly simple, Foster, and we're referring to it now as step out and step in. That's one and two, step out, step in. The step out is to end and terminate the invisible contract that exists between you, the natural born man or woman, and the fiction, which is the state or the crown. So first you have to step out of that fiction. No one else can do it for you. And this is the beautiful thing. It's almost like a Sufic parable. You could wear it on a feather. It's so powerful, and yet it's so simple. You have to step out, meaning to say you sign your declaration of freedom. It's an apostille, an oath and bond to self. You can write it on the back of a napkin, and it is legitimate under pure law. That is your law. You are your own court of record, but only when you claim it. So first you have to step out of the invisible contract, which is the indentured servitude, which is really comes about through the birth registration process. It wouldn't take anyone longer than an hour or two to research the fundamentals here. But you first step out. Once you've done that and terminated the invisible contract with the government by declaring a notice of sovereignty or of freedom, and we show folks how to do this through the Law and Governance Faculty and the Law Academy in the New Earth Nation Institute online. So we're providing those templates for people. They can even go to the New Earth Nation Law and Governance Faculty or to the newearthnation.org site, and it's laid out for them. It's time-coded. They can simply digitally signature their mark, and that enshrines their new oath and bond to self. That's public record. That's now done in pure law. Once that step out has taken place, we invite people to then step in to the new nation, which is they become a micronation. You can do this as an individual or as a family or as a community. And then you establish a constitution, and then you treaty that constitution, that micronation, to the greater nation, which is the primary fractal. So New Earth Nation is that primary fractal. And the thousands, tens of thousands of communities that are micronations, treaty to the New Earth Nation, we then become that collective. But it is not a collectivist collective. It is not the kind of thing that would be Henry Kissinger's wet dream. In fact, it would be a horror story for someone like Henry Kissinger, God bless him. But it's step out first of the invisible contracts, and then step into the covenant of fellowship amongst living, breathing fellow men and women. That's effectively what it comes down to. But I would also add this. People need to make a distinction and understand the difference between legal and lawful. There is a huge gulf that exists there. Lawful is what you and I know to be right and wrong. So do no harm, cause no harm, loss, or injury to another living soul. That is law. That's the only law that should prevail on the face of the earth. Everything else becomes something else. It becomes means by which we are commandeered, manipulated, co-opted, owned, controlled, and ultimately harvested. So statutes is the language of legalese. A statute is not a law, but in the United States of America, it's not lost on us in Europe that you've got something like 10 million statutes and ordinances, none of which are lawful in point of fact. And yet you are tricked into believing when a man in a costume called a peace officer stops you in the street, either with a taser or with a threatening glare, and tells you to hand over something like your identity. There is no law that requires you to do that on God's earth, but you are tricked into believing that you have to. And now it's gone so far that if you don't do that, you're likely to get tasered in the face. Well, that's the crown and the state run amok. And it is only going to end when enough living men and women become conscious enough to engage at the collective level and then begin to form tribunals. That's fundamentally what we're doing, Foster. And the International Tribunal of Natural Justice, the ITNJ, has been formalized as of today. And on the 15th of June this year, the first inaugural ceremonial seating takes place, actually in Runnymede, England, on the 800th anniversary of the signing of Magna Carta. Wow. We're having our first seating in Runnymede this year. Once we do that, the tribunal, again, will become a fractal model, which can replicate all around the world in towns and cities. And it's an online forum. It's legitimate. We can have jurors. We have the judges and prosecutors, defense counsels appointed to those governments that are being prosecuted by us, but that choose not to attend our court. So we're playing law under the purest expression of law. The difference being, we're not playing legalese. We're not trying to cajole people. We're creating an open forum of natural justice and pure law where the whole world can look in. Transparency, open trials.
Yeah. Well, it's historic that you're both making this clear and making it easy to actually engage in it. And I just want to let people know that a month from today, on March 14th, the topic of our Thrive Together event will be countries as corporations. And this is a rabbit hole that I've been deeply down for the last few months trying to make sense of this. And we'll bring experts on there to show the evidence that not only have countries become corporations, but countries shouldn't have existed in the first place. And the key question is, by what authority do you claim to rule me? And that's the one they don't want asked in the courts or in the government. Yeah. So thank you for your work on that, Sasha.
And I want to say something here. I really appreciate this. And, you know, I had a conversation yesterday with Josh Del Sol, who made Take Back Your Power. He's just doing fabulous work with smart meters, and Jeremy Johnson, who's an EMF expert and a solutions expert in the field. But we were talking about this whole relationship to authority. And I think it is always the first step, because we are so inundated with the belief that someone has rights that we don't have, and that includes the right to tell us what to do, and how even to subvert our own morality. And that is, it really takes a lot to take that first step. And once you do, everything opens up and is possible from there. And yet it's, and the fact that you actually have to be courageous nowadays to have a relationship with self requires a kind of courage that you would think and one day will be the birthright that people are born into and naturally encouraged. Instead, now there's this rite of passage. And I think what I've noticed in my life is that what happens when you do, you know, David Icke calls it stepping out of the hassle-free zone. There are lots of people describing it in lots of ways, but the gist of it is that we claim our relationship to self as primary. Our own true knowing is what we're going to listen to and act in accord with. And as we come together, and I'm so grateful, you know, for people to get a feel for what resources there are here for us to recognize each other and join together, because I think it really helps to have a buddy system in this whole thing, where, because it's challenging, it will require that socially uncomfortable sometimes because it hasn't yet become the norm. And so when you step outside of it and you have a different, and it's your own authority that you listen to instead of another, and when you are stopped illegitimately or challenged illegitimately, to name that, like, I mean, I've been a bold activist for as long, I'm sure my mom would say since I was born, and for as long as I can remember. And I went to Berkeley in the 60s. I got trained in it. And still, you know, when I say, by what authority do you have to ask me for that? You know, my heart's beating fast. Like, it takes a lot to do it. And yet what it affords is a community of possibility, of possibilitarians. You know, we're coming together and we recognize how many of us there really are and how much is really possible, and that this can happen in quantum leaps, as is happening now. I think most people can feel, you know, that it's ramping up on all fronts. And one of the fronts that it's ramping up on is that we are finding each other and we are supporting one another. And I really feel like this kind of a website platform that you're offering, Sasha, just helps so much for us to have a different reflection of who we are and what we're capable of. And the rewards for it are not only a good night's sleep, but, you know, Foster and I can always gauge how well we're doing by, if we just go to sleep peacefully, no matter what is happening out there in the controversy, when we're true to ourselves, we sleep well. And I think that's a really good indicator, you know, and this kind of reclaiming our relation to our own divine selves is really key in this. So I just want to honor that it's, you know, the idea is easier than the execution. And the execution is ever more liberating and rewarding than the idea. So it's worth it. And I wanted to start getting some people. There's lots of people with good questions. So I'll call on you and you can Goa will enable your video and then.
Goa, you can just bring them in my place.
Yeah. Or maybe in Kate's place, because we can't see Kate and Aaron, and then you guys can be on audio. But one thing I wanted to ask is people raising your hand, like I think is it Sophie and some others, if you could submit what your question is, that helps me to organize this a little bit as I'm bringing people on. But how about Michael B? You want to come in with your question?
Okay, so Michael, I've brought you up as a panelist, and I'll be enabling your video. Go ahead and click on the video button next to your name in the panelist window, and that'll get your video going.
While you're bringing Michael in, he was the one of the people who had submitted a comment already on the website, and it's an apropos of what we're just talking about, where he said, I've yet to find a single case where a person declared themselves to be sovereign unto themselves and the government just looked the other way and said, okay. So I don't know whether that's what you wanted to talk about or not, Michael.
Michael, are you there? We have you unmuted.
Well, Foster, let me say until Michael comes on the line that there are a great many examples of people who have successfully managed to declare their sovereignty and are left well alone by the government. And I can happily put our friend in touch with some of those examples, which you can learn from in Australia and in the United Kingdom.
Excellent.
And in Canada.
Good. So, Michael, are you with us?
Michael says he's not set up for microphone. He just added it in our chat.
All right. Well, at least we got a question from you from the website. And if you want to contact the New Earth Nation and ask for some references about people who have been successful, at least in in Australia or the UK, that would help build a foundation under this notion that that it can't be done.
Foster, can I just add to that only 2 weeks ago I did a 2-hour show with Siam Kapilano, the hereditary chief of the Squamish peoples that encompasses about 7 million North American, Canadian First Nation peoples. Not only has Siam Kapilano and his partner, the Chief Justice Irene Gravenhorst, not only have they stepped outside of the fictions, and not only has the Canadian government turned a blind eye, these people went on to form their own sovereign government in broad daylight and have received AAA rating in, as their own bank. So there are a great many hugely successful stories out there, but I'm afraid Michael and others will have to dig a bit deeper. I also on that same show spoke with Murumu, who's a well-known Indigenous figure from Australia, and he has completely stepped out of any contract with governments, drives his vehicle without any registration plates and all the rest of it, and it cannot be apprehended by the state. There's a number of success stories out there. But, of course, it's an understandable question that Michael is posing because we are very much at the threshold right now in our social ecology in discovering this inherent or intrinsic freedom. What I find shocking is that we find it shocking that there are people who are sovereigns. For the love of God, we should all be, we are born to it, so why don't we just claim it? All the rest is artifice and nonsense, and frankly, hugely insulting to the soul.
Yeah. And I want to be clear that we're not recommending to people that you just do it, that you just do this without knowledge. You know, if you get pulled over on the side of the road by some guy with a badge and a gun, and you just tell him, well, I'm a living, breathing human being, so, you know, forget it, you may run into trouble. So make sure that you get good professional advice and be careful about how you go about it, because unfortunately, we're still living in a police state that hopefully our grandchildren will look back and laugh and say, you what? You had to what?
Yeah, and I think also confrontation in that way isn't always everybody's first step. I mean, I think in the process of coming into our own, there's, you know, first the recognition that we know something's wrong, you know, and it's brewing. And then we realize that we're not thinking the way other people are thinking, and that in fact we have a whole different worldview. And then we actually speak up about that different worldview. And then we find others with that other worldview. And then we join together to do these other things, so that it doesn't mean, you know, some of us have obviously, you know, taken huge steps out there to become really comfortable in this process. And it's, I can't tell you how liberating it is when you do stop, you know, just being dictated in any way, not in any way, of course, we're still paying taxes and doing things that are a part of the destruction, but in so many ways to step out, it really is freeing. But I think that the process is a very individual one, and one that you need to be just honest and gentle and clear with yourself about the way that's right for you to do it. And I think these joining together to see how many are in it is really helpful. So how about Susan Terry? You had a question you want to come in?
Yeah, I was asking question. What was my question? I had a few since then.
Thanks for waiting so long.
Yeah, my question was in regards to in building these communities and the resources that you have available within the communities. You have a certain model that you've designed, and all of these designs look like they are destined for an area where there is great sunshine and warmth. Whereas I live up in the north of Canada, and where there's temperatures of minus 32, minus 40 something, and a lot of snow. So in creating these models that you have done, I think it's Jay that was talking about that, is there consideration for the resources within the region and the conditions of the elements that are out there to deal with?
I can answer that, although I think you're actually posing that question to Sasha. Our designs are, we have 7 different village models that are being designed for one community so that we can address all of the different environments that are available. So I can drop in the link here to the chat, which is our highest good housing hub. And if you go to the one that we're working on right now, the first one that we're designing is the most affordable, because we want to demonstrate that people can get together and for less than the price of two or three homes, build themselves an entire sustainable village and create true freedom for themselves if they want to completely step out of the system, or if they want to become part of a global collaborative for highest good creation and sharing, then they can join with what it is that we're doing and submit their plans and share all that with the world, which is what we're all about. And you can look on that hub, the open source hub for the Earthbag Village, and you'll see that we've run the numbers and stuff for heating and cooling, and we're working a lot on the details of maximum hot water efficiency and things like that. And then our goal is just to develop this endlessly so that we can address all environments ultimately, you know. And so that's where we're at with it. So the short answer is, yeah, we want to be able to address all living environments sustainably, and it can totally be done.
And Kate and Aaron are up where it gets cold also, there and outside of Portland. So I know I've seen you guys on some cold days, I know. So in terms of options.
If Susan was asking that question of me and the New Earth Nation, which I suspect she was, because we do prefer some of the architecture that we've been putting out. Most of it, in point of fact, has been predisposed toward the tropics. But in point of fact, Susan, if you check out the New Earth Nation Institute and the design and development faculty, you will find thousands of bioarchitecture models and a whole heap of different technologies for building, some of them for the Arctic. In point of fact, we do have communities being provisioned in Siberia. So we're quite familiar with the broad spectrum of building, not just in the tropics, but in cold climates. But again, you'll need to go in and check out the design and development faculty and see what's on offer there.
Thanks, Sasha. this is Susan Terry of the Zero Point Learning faculty.
I kind of figured that, Susan.
Kimberly?
Yeah.
Can you bring in Robert Miller if he's on? I was particularly impressed by his model for funding communities that are actually bringing families and individuals out of poverty. And, you know, I know that it's a big issue and oftentimes doesn't get discussed is how, you know, how do communities get funded? And that might be a good place to start.
Great. Okay, Robert Miller, I see you're here.
Do you have a camera, Robert?
I don't actually see Robert in the field
it's
at
Bob
all.
Bob Miller. Look under Bob.
Oh, okay. There he is. Go ahead, Bob. You're unmuted.
How about bringing up a video?
Okay, Mr. Miller, if you want to click on the icon next to your name with the video camera, we can get your video feed going, but your audio is unmuted.
Bob, are you there? I hear typing, but no voice yet.
I think that was someone else.
Okay.
I can't tell if we're getting Bob's video or audio or video feed going.
Well, a Dr. Alan Orwig. And then again, the people with your hands up, if you can write what your questions are, it really helps.
So Kimberly, who's the person that you wanted to ask a question from so I can bring them up as a presenter?
I have so many. Okay. I had Dr. Alan Orwig and then Sam Coltrane.
Okay, I don't see Alan anywhere.
Doctors, I think it's under.
I don't have any doctors either. Huh. Do you see their name in the list?
I see their question in the feed. Let's go to Sam Coltrane right now, and then we'll come back to that.
Okay.
I'll find the Alan.
Okay, so Sam, you're unmuted. Let me get your video going. Okay. Sam, are you with us?
And the video.
Yeah, Sam, if you want to click on the video icon next to your name in the panelist window, that'll activate that. Oh, we're having an uncommon number of audio problems today. Well, that's too bad. Maybe we should just read the question.
All right, Sam, and I think this is really for Aaron and Kate, because I know you have some very innovative energy that you're using up there. But does anyone know of a community of more than one structure that is off the grid and using free energy device?
Well, I would say that we're not off the grid yet, but we do have a few plans to do so. And it's never a single thing, a single project approach. It seems to be this kind of combining multiple ideas to achieve your goal. And so we're looking at this from every aspect, from traditional things like solar power to wind power, and then getting into some of the more exotic things that I could speak to if we have time to do that. Should I do that?
Briefly.
All right. So yeah, some of the technology. Some of the technologies that we're using are based on a lot of Tesla's impulse technology, the John Bedini way of charging batteries. We found methods to repurpose lead acid batteries with a pickling spice known as alum that turns them into a lead alkaline battery. And they hold about twice the density once you do that. Another thing, since we live here in the Northwest, that's really kind of amazing is repurposing piezoelectrics. Believe it or not, you can make rain panels. So every time a drop hits the panel, it moves electrons.
Wow.
Another way of actually using that is we found ways with chemicals through a lot of John Hutchinson's work of having a piezo and then having an active ion chemical to create an infinity battery, a battery that runs forever. And I've got a four-year-old one here on site that seems to be increasing in voltage over time. So it's really exciting. And I like to just share how we do that. We have an anode and a cathode, which are copper and magnesium. And we've been doing tests to get away from magnesium and use aluminum, and specifically using old pop or beer cans because they're already sealed and you can cook the two ingredients together. And so the piezoelectric is cream of tartar. And the active ion is Epsom salts minus the water. So you cook the two ingredients together, and you've got a battery that runs itself pretty much forever. And technically, it's not a battery. But I have and know some people that have taken this technology and ran with it, made enough of them to make a 12-volt array, and then have it charge with a comparator circuit, charge a giant cap bank. And then they'll put them into their chicken coops that run a light. So you can go in there, flip a switch, you begin to drain from the cap bank the charge that you've stored, which runs a light maybe 10, 12 minutes. But that's enough to do everything you have to do in the chicken coop, and then flip the switch off, and it begins to charge right back up again. So a lot of these technologies also involve us using energy very differently.
And then on top of that, just to chime in very quickly, you know, these opportunities, as people are able to see and experience them, and we've even talked about putting them into tiny home applications, because you could take a whole wall and then create a sustainable solution. So the cool thing about that is that it's moving into these new different kinds of economic models, where we show our community where the gaps are, that we can get the community involved in supporting it. And so this is really becomes a stepping stone for helping us support these ideas and moving them out. So even though we may be using traditional commerce, you know, these different stepping stones around benefit companies and B Corps become a pathway in, and then we're able to take folks down the rabbit hole around sovereignty.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a whole systems design that's happening all at once, but we're coming up with new ways to crowdfund, because a lot of these, you know, barriers have been around how do you get the resources and the funding. So we're now seeing really interesting new models come in, just like what community public offering. Brand new legislation that hit Oregon through one of our sister innovation centers called Hatch. And you can essentially raise up to $250,000 for your own business here locally that locals can invest in. Locals can help create and move that information and that technology and that idea out. So we're spreading the idea to just show there's lots of cool things happening that you may not even hear about. And that's what we're here for.
So inspiring. Kate and Aaron, what are one or two of the main things that you're still finding challenging? What are the issues or problems that you're working on solving?
I think, you know, one that we see is, again, coming back to this whole thing around how people give away their personal power. And really, we become kind of your personal cheerleaders to help you step into that and recognizing where that takes place, because it does come down to mindfulness and it does come down to choices and helping people recognize the opportunities. So one of the biggest areas that we've been focusing in on is a lot of the social conditioning around fear of failure, because in our world and society, the failure often comes with a very expensive price tag. And because we've each gone through it personally, we know what that looks and feels like. It's not very fun. So we've really worked hard to bring community together to create a safe space to blunder. We've created the blunder principle, you know, with folks stepping forward to help us create these ideologies to make it safe for people to participate. And then we create the playground so it's not going to take, you know, make it so risky, in other words. And then with the crowdfunding pieces, by helping, you know, the projects become the teachers. That's the really cool thing around here, because we go through always a debrief process of what worked and what didn't work. And that's where we mine for those aha gems. And that's what's powerful enough where every time we go around the cycle, we get more people involved, more people engaged, more people helping look at resources in a different way that they would have never thought possible. So that's what I think is the real powerful work that we see transforming on it's just escalated our work into a whole different level this last year. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Hallelujah.
I'd love to ask each of the community representatives who's on to speak for a moment about the whole notion of ownership and property. How do you envision that, or how is it working in your community? Can people own property? How are decisions made?
And then after this, we'll bring up Borj. So maybe, Goa, you can get that ready with Borj Mellon. Go for it.
I'm happy to answer that first, if that's acceptable.
Please.
To my colleagues.
Sure.
Well, what we're doing expressly with the New Earth Project and the New Earth Nation is trying to educate folks to the distinction between being an owner and being a steward or a custodian or a guardian. In the first instance, let's be clear about something. You can never own anything in this world. That is a fiction. And in point of fact, when people own their own home, they don't own it at all. Or they own their own farm, they don't own their farm at all. They maybe have their name on a piece of paper, but that farm, that deed is fundamentally registered, again, to a state or to a crown. And that act of registration is offering up that land holding to Rex the King, which is what registratum stands for. So you have to be very clear about the etymology. Again, the base of trust and equity, or the contract law that prevails underneath people and their land holdings. You do not own your home. Be clear about that. Now, the smartest thing of all is if you establish your home or your farm as a trust, which takes it off the planet, so to speak, and you become a trustee, you have all sorts of protections now that do not allow for banks and bankers and even states to interfere and intercede. So we encourage people to really understand guardianship and stewardship, custodianship, as opposed to the very toxic and very arcane notion of ownership. In the first instance, it also frees you up tremendously energetically when you're no longer believing yourself to be the owner of something on an ephemeral planet, an ephemeral life, which is 70 years. It really frees you up to engage with the more spiritual dimension of our existence, when you stop thinking in terms of owning things, but think more akin to the thinking of the First Nation peoples, the shaman people of the world, who think in terms of stewardship and custodianship. That is something fundamental that we're endeavoring to educate our constituency to. But also, because if you want to engage in a new nation, which is outside of the control of the corporations masquerading as governments, you need to engage with an understanding of trust and trust law. Because when you place your holdings into a for instance, I'll give you a classic example right now. Farmers who are facing bankruptcy or seizure in the United States, all they need to do is two farmers side by side need to sell their land to one another for $1. Okay. Neighbors, each other, their families grew up together. They should sell their farms to each other for $1 and then institute those farms as trusts and then appoint one another as the lifelong trustee to the farm. All of a sudden, you're outside of the grasp of the state and the federal taxation privileges and so on. So there's tremendous amounts of freedom to be had when you simply release this toxic and quite false notion of ownership and engage with trusteeship.
Yes. And within a New Earth community, when you have the graphics of those beautiful homes, if let's say a family is living in one of those homes, do they then have some sort of stewardship or trusteeship of that home? What keeps another person from coming in and saying, you know, I want to live here instead of you?
It's absolutely theirs, and they're custodians or stewards or trustees for life ad infinitum. There's no problem with that, Foster. In fact, we encourage that process to be enshrined in the law, the apostille, the oath and bond that gets signed. We urge that there is continuity enshrined in that trusteeship. I mean, there is no central trust that is trying to own and collectivize the trusts. Again, the New Earth Nation exists in the noosphere, in the atmosphere, but it is protected by its own court of record and in point of fact by its own tribunals. So we're just playing the silly game that exists, but better and in service of people and planet and not in service of private corporations, yeah, which are premised on exploitation, usury, and fundamentally blood economy.
And Kate and Aaron, how do you deal with that with your community? If new people come into the community, how do they participate or not in any kind of ownership or stewardship?
That's a really good question. We've been very slow by design to step into this because there is a consciousness piece that's attached around just exactly what Sasha was talking about. And part of it is really helping create, first of all, community story about what it is we're doing here. And, you know, figuring out together with, you know, we have some people that have come to live with us and it hasn't worked out, and others that are our family members, and then working across the generations to help, again, mine for these values, you know, as we go through the projects. So our foundation piece is really about the power with, and it goes back to the goal of putting our land into a trust. And it's really talking about legacy. And it's really factoring in stakeholders such as future generations. And this is where Aaron and I are really excited about news, because we just found out that we're going to be bringing a new being into the world.
Ooh. Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yes. So that's our big Valentine's Day news. And we're really excited because it helps really ground and solidify these contexts for what kind of world do we want our child to be growing up in, and what's the lifestyle, what's the peace. So we even have new people that are stepping up that have watched us be these pioneers to get the land that now want to help. But we're going into the discussions that this is not about ownership. This is really about creating a legacy and something new. And that the trust piece is designed so that way others can, we can pay this forward. that we can create something for future generations. So Aaron, do you have anything?
Just wanted to touch on Sasha, you know, I love what you're doing. And I love the idea of getting back to the real law, but I also want to challenge the fact that even if we did get back to the real de jure law and we do away with this de facto government, that still even that form of law is adversarial. And there's a maxim in law that says, let he who will be deceived be deceived. So I think we still, as much as we can to push out the de facto, we still kind of have to redesign this and kind of make it so that law doesn't assume jurisdiction anyway, like they do and will do still in a de jure setting, that we really want to redesign this, right? And I think, you know, with Thrive's main purpose of do no harm, right? What is the I'm not saying it correctly, but
the non-violation, non-initiation of force. Yeah,
exactly.
That's a foundational principle here that we get people talking about. What does that mean to them? What does that look like? How do we know if that's happening? How can we observe that?
So getting the adversarialness out of law. Can you speak?
Couldn't agree more with that, Aaron. As I said a little earlier to Foster, that there is only one universal law on the temporal plane that ought to be acceded to, and that is do not cause no harm, loss, or injury to another living soul. Everything outside of that is artifice and simple and complexity. So I couldn't agree more with you. If we simply acknowledge that one point as living men and women, all would be well with this world. I don't enjoy law. None of my law team enjoy law because we understand that it's purely the science of deception, ultimately.
Thank you. How about you, Jay? Could you share a little bit of your vision before we go along to Borje?
Yeah, definitely. When it comes down to property ownership and all the legal issues that we're talking about right now, you know, our philosophy is really to go with the Buckminster Fuller quote. You know, Buckminster Fuller says, in order to change the existing paradigm, you're not struggling to try and change the problematic model, create a new model and make the old one obsolete. That, in essence, is the higher service to which we're all being called. And that's really our focus, is to provide people the freedom to do what it is that they want. And so structurally, we're open sourcing and free sharing everything that we do as a starting point and inviting others to do it differently, so that we can open source and free share that too. And that way people can choose what it is that they want. Personally, I resonate ridiculously strongly with the idea of stewardship. Like, that's my personal belief and philosophy. But I also recognize that a lot of people really feel strongly about home ownership and different versions of that. And so, you know, our goal is to respect as many diverse opinions as possible and partner with people with different ideas different than ours and open source them all. And share the different perspectives so people can choose what it is that works best for them.
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. This is so great. And there are, so we'll go to Borge, and then there are lots of others, lots of other questions coming through for everybody.
Borge, if you want to click on the icon next to your name in the panelist list, we can get your video going, but you're already unmuted.
Okay, I've clicked on the video. Let's see what that does. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, and we saw you for an instant. There you are. Okay, good.
Okay. So here's my situation. Since 1982, basically I've been working full-time on sustainable opportunities. That time I had an experience where the world was on fire, and I couldn't stay as a Fortune 500 headhunter. At that point, I couldn't stay in my job. Pretty soon, I was in trouble with everybody I knew. And then the family thing came up where they took my driver's license, where they took my passport, and they've been doing it repeatedly and putting on criteria, which is not even legal. I go to court for a year, turn around, and my driver's license and my passport are gone again. The last time I was in Los Angeles, and I found it had been gone for about a year, and I was traveling illegally in the U.S. Which put me under court suspension and things like that. I don't think this is going to go away. I think this is an opportunity to look at my personal sovereignty. I'm not frustrated about it. I'm just limited often when I'm trying to travel because my passport's gone again.
You're being gifted with sovereignty.
Yes, I got it back after impossible situations. I was starting to visit Ken Belzer. I live in Sedona when I'm not trapped in Canada. And I was starting to travel to Aspen. I've been invited to different places to come and talk about options in health and other things that I, remarkable things that have come into my path. Now, my question is, I've got a very good relationship with Bermuda, for instance, the people who signed the currency there. They've offered me anything if I go there. Are there places that, even small countries, that are open to collaborating, even on an interim basis, with people who are declaring themselves a sovereign? Or can I travel as a, I have a Swedish passport as well as my Canadian one, which my Canadian one is under suspension right now. But I'm looking to address this on a more sustainable or permanent basis. Can I travel internationally? I can drive, perhaps, in Canada without a driver's license. Can I travel internationally without a passport, or how can I do that?
So the question is crossing state and national borders
yes.
as a sovereign being, just so because we have some yes. questions lined up here. Okay.
Kimberly, I can answer that question if you like.
Sure, please.
Well, in simple terms, you are able to travel without a passport, and I know folks who've done it. And it's complicated, but you can do it. You have to first send a fax to the port that you're arriving at. Let's say you're going to fly from the United States to Madrid in Spain. You would have to send a fax to the port authority in Madrid at the airport and let them know that you're arriving. Let them know that you're coming into the country on such and such a date, on such and such a flight, and that you'll have $2,000 in your pocket and that you won't become incumbent on the state of Spain. You'll be there for 2 weeks or whatever the duration is. And you invite them to refuse you entry. They won't do that. They'll ignore you. You can do that two or three times and get tacit acceptance and then fly. This has happened successfully. Kimberly, am I speaking? Are you trying to stop me? I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Kimberly, you're muted.
Okay. Wow, we've lost her video, her audio feed. She's not muted, okay. But for some reason it's not coming through. Go ahead, Sasha.
Bush, just to answer your question, fundamentally, you are able to travel if you get tacit acceptance from the port authority at which you're going to fly to or travel to. And under pure law, you are able to engage that way. And folks have succeeded at it. But of course, it's difficult. There is also the World Passport, which you may be aware of, which Gary Davis established. I believe he died last year or the year before, but I think the World Passport is still there. A couple of my own team have taken on the World Passport and have been able to travel with it to some effect. I have to say that the business of passports and boundaries and nation states, all of those are artifice. And as soon as we have enough people like you, Borsch, who are stepping into that pure sovereign space, then we end that fiction. So it really is a numbers game, and it's about getting enough living men and women around the world to agree to a new form and a new expression in how we travel and engage with one another across these imposed boundaries. When there's enough of us doing it, we can step out of the fiction. You asked the question, are countries out there, are there any nations out there which are allowing that as part of their perfunctory policy? I don't believe so. If there was, I think we would know about it in the New Earth project. But I can tell you also that if you have enough money, you can purchase a diplomatic passport in any number of small island states or developing nations of the world. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm. I do have a Swedish passport, and I've been offered from Bermuda from the people there. So that's not an issue. It's a case of procedure for me, and I want to do this correctly. And I don't mind stepping out. I just don't want my sovereignty limited. I should be able to travel where I want, when I want.
I salute you for that.
I'm hearing that. I'm going to, and thank you, Sasha. We have Arthur. Villa, and then we'll see what time it is. We have Bill Barnes also go if you want to bring up some more folks. Thank you for submitting your questions, and some of them, like, there are so many good questions. I know you'll all get, you know, we can interact, encourage participants here to interact directly with the folk, the presenters here, because there are so many good questions that will be specific to each of you as well. I'm trying to get some that are general. We'll see what we're doing.
So okay. Am I on?
Hey, Arthur?
Yeah.
Go ahead and click on the button next to your name in the list. We'll get your video feed going.
Okay, my name in the list. I see an audio connection. Okay, I see speaker video here. Hello there. Yeah, thank you for putting this whole panel together. It's fantastic, and I love the whole community aspect. My question, I popped into the Q&A, was that a number of us are mindful of the whole fake debt issue, and how much of a relief would it would be amazing to be able to get people off the mindless hamster wheel so that they can see the forest for the trees if they didn't have this fake debt that they were paying off. And so I'm curious, in the folks on the panel, if any of you are dealing with setting aside the fake debt to Federal Reserves and central banks, and promoting that as an avenue for folks to re-empower themselves.
Well, I just want to jump in real quick and maybe give a shout out to getoutofdebtfree.org. Has anyone ever heard of that website? Mm-hmm. Because yes. It's a wonderful website that shows you how to use the system that was created for you to remove these debts. One of the things we learn, and I'm sure Sasha can speak to this as well, is that whenever you engage in commerce, there has to be equal shares. You know, if you're giving something, you're taking something. And part of the contracts that we were given gave us a clause to allow us to pay for debts with the money that's owed to us by the government and the bankruptcies that have ensued. So that's a great website, as well as we here locally have a gentleman, Winston Shrout, who gives classes and workshops on this topic. And that's all I got.
In simple terms, you can discharge against your birth bond, Arthur, if you know how to do it. Again, this is not for novices. Amongst our own extended team of law experts in New Earth Project and the New Earth Trust, I do know folks who have purchased homes and sports cars by going in and filling and sending letters in the right way, being their own bankers, knowing that language, and effectively tricking the system into discharging whatever they are purchasing against their birth bonds with the Treasury. You can do that. Anyone can do it. And we're very much hoping to make that stuff more of an explicit science in the coming months through the Law and Governance faculty of the New Earth Nation Institute online.
And what are you going to be doing for currency in the New Earth Nation, Sasha?
Well, we already launched, we did a soft launch of our promissory a few weeks ago. We kept it very quiet. We raised about $75,000 overnight within a couple of days. And then PayPal closed our account down and said, you can't do that. We said, we can't do what? And they said, well, you can't be selling currency. We said, we're not. We are offering promissories in exchange to our constituents for their donations. They donate money. We give them a promissory saying thank you for the donation. Redeem the same amount of money in a New Earth Nation community down the line. Said that's a quid pro quo. It's an energy exchange. We're not selling currency. But PayPal begged to differ, whereupon we had to withdraw from using that somewhat toxic payment gateway, and we developed our own. So actually today, being Valentine's Day, we go live with our five new portals with our own payment gateway installed. And we'll be doing our next promissory offering in a few weeks' time. But we know it's successful already. And we're looking forward to ramping it up a little.
Wow. What a pregnant pregnant Valentine's Day we have with a new currency, a new network, and a new baby.
You know, it's so neat to see how each of the communities, like and many more than are represented here, are all identifying the same things. You know, it's open source, it's food, energy, stewardship, currencies, sovereignty. The issues are the same, whether it's, you know, Kate and Aaron or Jay or Sasha or any number of these other, you know, we're out there and we're all coming into the same things because these are the things that define our lives and our freedom. And so we have, and the whole thing about open source and how connected we are through this, there's nothing more exciting to me than open source, because I think it's like new energy technology in that it reflects the bounty that is already. And it wouldn't work if that weren't so. And that's true of the new energy technology, and it's true of open source. So I'm deeply encouraged by that. So
Kimberly, before you go on, I want to take just a moment to represent Bob Miller, because unfortunately his microphone is apparently not getting through to us. So he's written in a response to my question or invitation on the Q&A, and he says, this is the person who's been involved in the sustainable family community. And he says, our design for the sustainable economy is primarily core commercial sized businesses of aquaculture, greenhouses, farming, creating over 100 jobs and profits that are all used in the community initiative. Additional private businesses are also welcome in the community. Each community size is limited by the income and profits of the core economic engine, core businesses. A little of the businesses is set aside to assist starting other communities within their own commercial businesses. And this is what moved me so much about his book, and I highly recommend. It's called Poverty as My Teacher, Learning to Create Sustainable Family Communities, because it's a very clear business plan from the ground up in a free, non-state way to literally pull people and families out of poverty. So thank you for that, Bob. We look forward to more later.
I think Kate and Aaron, you'd love it because it's so much your story of how this came to be. And I want to remind people that, you know, these conversations where sometimes we have them where we've got a topic like this, and the next one, February 28th, it's really going to be a casual exchange the whole time about current events and interpreting the news. So whatever's, you know, front and foremost in your consideration, bring that, your insights, your sources of news, and we'll be sharing the same. So I hope you tune in with us then as well. So we just have a few minutes left, many more questions than we can answer right now, but I think we can continue this in the portal. For those of the subscriber portal on the event page, we can continue to have the conversation and you can answer each other's questions and hear each other's considerations. But I think we had two more to go if we can do it quickly. Goa, are you queued up with Arthur or St. Martha?
Looks like Sky is in.
St. Martha's
Sky
up there,
is
yes.
St. Martha, yes. Great.
So they can just click on their video button next to their name, and they're already unmuted.
Well, okay, I guess the video is not going to work. That's okay.
Do you see the video button there?
Yeah, I do. We've noticed select here to send video to other participants.
Someday we'll be looking back just like the old crank telephones and saying, God, remember when we had to find our video buttons and sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't?
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead. Okay, we have some time.
Okay. I wanted to say that I've been really excited the last few months to see how Thrive's been growing and New Earth Nation's been growing and learning about all new ones. And I post megatons via Facebook. But are there other ways that you can suggest to help us grow these communities faster? Or am I just being way too impatient?
The most efficacious way of growing conscious communities to disengage from the serpentine mythos that we're otherwise engaged with. So stop paying taxes. I mean, do it intelligently. Do it in a very intelligent, considered way. But please be clear about this. There is a dividing line, and you are that line. And so long as we're paying into a blood economy, it continues unabated. And I know from my own experience, I stopped paying taxes 1st of August 1997. The British Crown know exactly who I am and exactly where I am, and they wouldn't dare come after me.
Well, I don't pay taxes anyway because I don't make enough money, but I love the idea.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well,
thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we have one last question. Maybe Bill Barnes, do you want to come up? Are you there?
I'm here, and I'm looking for the video button.
Great.
Bill, I hope you can find it, because I haven't seen you since high school.
Okay, it's supposed to be next to my name, but I don't see my name. Okay. Video. Hey, how are y'all? Well, I live in central Mexico, and we in our house here and all the other houses in our community, we use water catchment. But there's an enormous problem right now that the fossil aquifer has been drawn down so much in this area. About 160,000 people live in this community overall. The aquifer is near depletion, and the rest of the watershed is polluted. And the wells that have been drilled are polluted with heavy metals. So you can see that there's going to be a lot of pressure for being able to supply water to everyone. Currently, 80% of the water goes for growing alfalfa, and that alfalfa is trucked to Texas for use in horse racing farms. So now you can get some of the political tensions that are at work here between corporate interests and those of communities and individuals. Colorado and New Mexico both had issues with people doing water catchment. Those have been changed now, but this is what I worry about, whether or not individuals being able to do water collection, water catchment. We have three different cisterns on our property, whether or not we're going to be restrained from being able to do that.
So the question, I suppose, is when there's a conflict like this in the larger community and you're working to do it in a different way in your community within that, what's the interface and how can you?
Well, I haven't heard anybody else this afternoon discuss this particular issue, that it seems like water is going to be the line of resistance that people are going to be feeling very soon. That we get only about 20 inches of rainfall a year, and anything less than that is going to put a real stress on our system. What other communities and of your panel have experienced this type of communications with state officials and local officials in resolving it?
I'd like to take that question.
Right.
For us, you know, what we found has been really helpful is understanding that the people that we're talking to are just people. And we've had very good success when we run up against county and state issues that need to be dealt with, just really asking them, okay, well, what are the reasons for these rules? Getting behind the reasoning. And then once you understand the criteria that existed for the creation of the laws or the provisions that would limit us from doing what we want to do, then we can work collaboratively to address those specific criteria. And with this approach, we've really found that it's, my personal opinion is that, you know, all the laws were really put into place to protect us from ourselves so that we don't hurt ourselves and things like that. Once we understand what that is, then we've been very effective in being able to say, okay, all right, we understand what that is. How can we work with that? How can we meet your criteria for safety, et cetera, and then still be able to build this way, which is way outside of the box? And we've been extremely effective in that. Like, really, we've had huge receptivity.
Yeah, Bill, I think that your community is one of the canaries in the coal mine, because I agree with you that water is going to be more valuable than gold soon, and especially because of the abuse of the environment, and so much of that has to do with the state. You know, you mentioned pollution, and most of the pollution is either created by the military or by corporations that are protected from personal liability by the government. So when, as this the state begins to collapse and community really emerges, then people will have to be personally accountable for pollution. And then you mentioned the catchment. You know, the state is trying to all over the place, even in California now, they're trying to restrict people's ability to catch the rain falling on their own buildings. So once again, without the state there to present its edicts to how we relate to our own environment, that's going to be a lot less of a problem. And then in terms of overuse, most of the overuse is condoned by the state, and they usually get kickbacks for it. There's a great book called Managing the Commons, Nobel Prize winning woman author, who really lays out the problem with many specific examples and shows that the answer to protecting the commons is not remote corporations, and it's not the state. Neither of them have the right interests, and they do a horrible job. What actually protects the commons is good communication amongst the community that has the vested interest in using and stewarding those very resources. So I think it's a great question. We don't have time to go into it deeper now, but I think that it's an especially appropriate question for today's discussion, because the answer is ultimately not only community, but conscious community, like is represented by the people on the call today.
Yeah. And another practical thing we could refer to in it also has to do with following up, Foster, on what you're talking about with accountability. When individuals are held accountable, and I know Sasha is going to get out of the internet cafe he's in any minute here, so we got to wrap this thing up. But with accountability, when individuals are held accountable for decisions that they make as part of a corporation or as part of government, you see things change very quickly. And that's what's happening now in the smart meter movement, where there is a template, a take back your power. If you go to that website, they're developing a whole template where they have identified the legal way to hold individuals accountable as individuals. And they are dropping, you know, they're quitting their jobs and resigning in honor of not having to enforce things that, in fact, are violating other people. And so if these backroom deals with Texas for the money, that, you know, you can't compete if they built their whole system on revenue based on the money they get from Texas to do this absurd stuff with the water. But what they've done in addition is not just have a way for people to be held accountable, but then to offer them a way to use their expertise from having been on the inside to help participate in finding the solution and working on the side of creating a better situation with the water use, for example. So I recommend going there, because one of the things what they're doing is applicable to any issue in any town, because it has to do with accountability, which, you know, sort of brings us right back around to where we started, which is accountability not only for the perpetrators of the destruction, but our own accountability in standing to the times that we're in, knowing ourselves and claiming our voice and our own freedom, which is, I think, what really the whole notion of conscious communities is all about. So I just want to say this. I love this. I love what everybody's doing. There are so many awake people all over this planet who are actively involved in open sourcing these solutions. And it gives me great confidence and hope, actually, for just what an exciting time we live in.
Let's have a final statement from each of our guests. Yes. Then we'll need to wrap up.
And then we'll have one open up the mics to make sure everybody gets to hear each other to say goodbye.
If I could be the first, because I am about to be hurled out into the jungle night here at 6 a.m. and I was given 2 hours. They opened up the only internet cafe in the jungle here. Bless them. The security guy stayed awake all night for us.
Wow.
So I will just say that, you know, like, you're absolutely right, Kimberly, to raise that point at the end. And what Josh and the guys are doing is fantastic. Simply put, it's mass action liability notices. And that is exactly correct. That is what we need to be all understanding and looking at round about now. Wherever government or the state or the crown are imposing their will against the sovereign will of living men and living women, we need to go on the front foot and get off the back foot. This idea that we need to acquiesce, that we need to scurry off into the shadows every time someone in a costume appears, or someone behind a seal of office or behind a mask, is a nonsense. We are natural-born living men and women for the love of God. We should walk in a straight line, broadcast from the center, love and be loved. And where the dragon dares to impinge upon our natural-born rights, we should take its head off. And the way you do it in the temporal domain in the year 2015 is by filing liability notices against those so-called authorities.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sasha. And thank you so much for your commitment to stay up so late and find a place where you could connect with it. It means the world to us. And we're going to get the highlights of this out to our entire network.
Yes, much love to you, Foster and Kimberly. Thank you.
Thanks, folks. Security guards, too. Tell them thank you. Okay, Jay and Kate and Aaron.
I'll go next, if that's all right.
Please.
Just, you know, I think a piggybacking off of what Sasha just said is a quote by Jack Reed. He says, the solution for everything is the solution to anything. And, you know, there's so many opportunities for people to participate right now. And we have the ability for the first time in human history to communicate effortlessly across the entire planet, which has allowed our organization to build a team that spans every continent of people from all around the world that are interested in creating solutions. And, you know, if people are looking for something to do, back to the question that was posed before, there are so many opportunities for everybody to participate and get involved in being part of the solution and being part of the change. And we do have the ability to create the world that we want. It's just a matter of reaching that tipping point of participation. And so every person that gets involved, every person that says, hey, I'll donate a couple hours of my time to this, or just sharing things on Facebook, it's amazing how big of an impact something so simple can be, because you never know who you know, and every action is a step in the right direction. And so thanks for everything that everybody on this team is doing, and it's a pleasure to be a part of the same team that's making a difference and doing good things.
Thank you, Jay. And for everyone, he's at One Community, that's onecommunityglobal.org, and Sasha's at newearthnation.org.
And Kate and Aaron now.
Well, gosh, I'm just so glad to meet and know about what you're doing, Jay and Sasha, and thank you so much again, Kimberly and Foster, for what you do, because it lifts my spirit. I'm just going to be high for the rest of the day after doing this. And I don't know, Kate, what do you think?
I just think it's here. I mean, we see it all around us, and, you know, we eat, live, and breathe it every day. And, you know, when you're able to just connect in with your neighbors and really find that common ground, all of these like other barriers seem to fall away. And that's what I'm really noticing right now, that, you know, it's part of, you know, us getting, you know, brave enough to step outside of our own patterns and our own boundaries that have held us back to go create this new place to play. And they're showing up. People I never would have thought in my lifetime, you know, are coming out here, and they're bringing their kids and their grandkids and their parents. And all of a sudden, we're just building stuff together. And out of that, there's some conversations like about sovereignty or about rain catchment systems or energy stuff that we're all getting curious about. Why aren't we seeing these solutions get out here? And what can I do to start changing that? So all I know is that it's awesome. So I'm really thankful that you have helped us give the language
to begin having the conversations, because that's made all the difference for us. And it helps us to create that new legacy and that stewardship to pay it forward. So thank you.
Well, thank you, too. And I want to ask everyone to please remember to fill out the evaluation on this, because it really helps us to just have these be ever more successful for everybody. And we're so, I'm so excited about your new baby. So congratulations. That's the best.
Yeah, I'm especially proud. Kate and Aaron, I'm so proud of what you've already made real. You know, you are living it, not only with the food, and I'm especially excited about the energy, but what you're doing interpersonally to make it work among human beings is the most challenging and the most important of all. And you're really, you've created a wonderful beacon. So is it correct that youringenuity.com is the best website, or is there another one?
That is correct.
There is a redirect, which is just ingenuity.pro, P-R-O.
Okay.
It links you right to the other one. So.
Okay, great.
And we'd love to have you up here sometime.
Yeah.
So you're invited.
We'd love to do that.
Anyone else that would like to come.
Thank you. We look forward to it.
So let's unmute everybody to give a good happy Valentine's Day goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. 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 Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Hear you all.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you, Foster, Kimberly. Thank you, Kimberly and Foster. Thank you.
We love you.
You're doing.
Love it. Great webinar.
Happy Valentine's. Thank you, Foster and Kimberly. Thank you, love you all. Bye-bye.
Much love.
Kimberly, Foster, and her team is awesome.
Thank you so much, Kimberly and Foster, thank you so much. Bless you.
Love you all.
Forgive everybody.
Oh, I just never got one.
Okay, go on. I think we can go ahead and close the audio window.
That was great.
Totally.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Jay and Kate and Aaron and Sasha, I know he's gone, but really appreciate you taking this Valentine's Day midday for this.
Oh, our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Goodbye, this everyone. One.
Bye.
Have a beautiful day. Stay.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Great job, everybody.
Bye-bye.